Good morning, good afternoon, I guess it is now. Welcome to Sussex County Council meeting of February 20.
Test, there we go. Mr. President, good afternoon, members of council. We do have one recommended change to agenda. On page 4, we can strike under public hearings item on conditional use number 2411. The applicant is asked to have that hearing rescheduled.
Okay. Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Raleigh, second, Mr. Schaefer. Any question? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Raleigh.
Yes.
I will yes, motion carried. We had the February 6th. Any corrections, questions? Hearing none, they'll stand. Correspondent, Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. We have two letters, and the first is from Clear Space Theater, and the other is from Retemp Development Center, Inc., both thanking council for their donations.
Any correspondence from council? Correspondence from council. Okay, now it's time for public comment. You should have signed up in the back on the document where you have 3 minutes to speak to council about something we have some interest in or control of. John Buccioni, is this something about our public hearing? Route 1, that's a public hearing, correct? Okay. That's later on. That's later on in the agenda.
Okay.
Okay. Anthony Scarpa. You can speak up here. Okay. Okay. That'll be, you can do that under the public hearing or it's time for public comment. And what, Ray, would you check online, please, for public hearings? Or excuse me, for public comment?
At this time, there is currently no one on the line.
Okay, we'll close public comment, move to consent agenda. We have three things, proclamation request for girls, use of existing wastewater infrastructure agreement UA1208, Long Neck Community Bank, Long Neck area, and use of existing wastewater infrastructure agreement IUA1176, East Gate, Johnson's Corner area. Any questions on those? If not, entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second. Mr. Questions on the motion. Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Raleigh.
Yes.
I will yes. Motion carried. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today on the agenda, we are going to perimeter buffer update on your packet. In your packet, there was the update outline, which I passed a paper copy contained in the packet was the PowerPoint we're going to go through, as well as the update. This is a work product that Mr. Robertson and Mr. have assisted us with, and I am hopeful this is the last presentation before we move to ordinance drafting. All this was the top priority of the council's update when it came to. Ordinance writing, and we've been before you a couple of times identifying what we were hoping to accomplish with the perimeter buffer update. We've received some feedback and direction is really contained in this document, which for intent and purposes is going to be the roadmap to what will become the ordinance. So we will highlight the parameters, but the outline has information. If you have anything specifically that you're concerned with or question, please let us know. Eventually, Mr. Robertson will have that task in front of you to draft the ordinance, to which we'll be back to introduce and hopefully keep this thing moving. Okay, so I kind of covered this. This is the top-ranked priority for the council. Last time I was here, I gave you a level update on what we were attempting to accomplish with this new ordinance and got some feedback from you. And now we've really given specifics in this this presentation, as well as the document I keep referencing, which, unless we hear otherwise, we are poised to move into the ordinance drafting at this point. So the document starts with, it's broken down in sections, and it does start with the definition section. Within the definition section, we do have six specific updates, which are either in need of updating in today's code or are even referenced in today's code. So technologies on their screen are what's inside the document. And as you can tell, it goes into much more specificity to the definitions of these terms. Going into the specifics of what we aim to see in the perimeter buffer, we start section two, which is called the perimeter buffer general standard. And this really is what hopefully we think will improve what we're seeing out when it comes to use and subdivision and RPCs that fall under perimeters, including the fact that we're going to use 30-foot in width for the perimeter buffer and a 20-foot buffer to that, which we hope will give the space to protect the area that work the perimeter buffer in the case of when woodlands are present, protecting those existing trees.
When the perimeter buffer protection area is 20 feet?
That is correct.
Okay. Is that number does appear on line 88, so I'm not sure how we know that that's going to be the number.
Thank you. My attorney tells me in the definitions it's defined in line 29, perimeter buffer area, an area adjacent to the perimeter buffer that contains what woodlands that is not less than 20 feet in width measured from the edge of the perimeter buffer.
That's why we pay him the big bucks.
There you go.
Bails me out again. So the idea is the perimeter buffer is going to be a standard 30 foot and then the 20 foot area of protection up against that when woodlands exist. There's many ways to create a area between the buffer. You may hear the term drip line. We didn't go in that direction. We use 30 feet because, quite frankly, 20 feet because 30 plus 20 is 50, and that's the buffer size for our resource buffer standards in most instances. So if we wanted to have a greater area, that's certainly feedback that we will receive in the ordinance writing and then the public hearing for the ordinance. And I'm certain there's going to be calls for greater area protection, but we're going to leave that final decision up to you guys. It will be in the ordinance as 30 plus 20 unless you tell us otherwise for the ordinance drafting exercise. Back to the slide here. The standards for the perimeter buffer, listing trees and shrubs, local and native species. We've included the ANSI A300 standards. That's something that we didn't have before. 70% and 30% breakdown, that's currently in code, so we're just codifying that. 15 trees per 100, that's the same. All trees and shrubs must be 6 feet in height at the time of planting and obtain a minimum height of 6 feet. That's an additional standard that doesn't exist today. Buffer can include existing woodlands and planted trees. We're being very specific that you can use existing woodlands. In fact, you'll see here in a minute that there's incentives, we hope, for developers to maintain woods and use those woodlands as the perimeter buffer. Of course, if there's a resource on the piece of property where we've had the resource buffer updated recently, that resource buffer takes precedent over and is not in addition to the perimeter buffer that we're talking about today. So if you have a 100-foot buffer on a resource, that would take precedent. You would still remain at 100 feet. And then the standards will include signage to mark the perimeter buffer, something that doesn't happen today in all cases. Mr. Hudson, question, or are you getting ready?
I'm just...
Okay.
good.
I saw your look. So something that we went over very carefully in, if you think back to the workshop, the fact that not all perimeter buffers are the same, and it really starts with the development of the piece of property and whether woodlands are inexistent at the time of the development or if there is no woodlands. Not all developments happen where their woodlands exist. Some do happen on what we would call ag fields where there aren't any woodlands. So it really takes you on a path of what to do related to the perimeter buffer. I'm going to start with, if there's a piece of property that has existing woodlands to be used for that perimeter buffer. And this is where we're hoping to build in some incentives to make sure that those woodlands remain. So if there is woodlands present, we are going to require a forest assessment by a certified professional to tell the county what type of forest or woods are present. The woodlands will be shown on the site plan and landscape plan. Woodlands shall remain in the natural state with very limited activity within. Sometimes where woods exist today, there is activity that takes place that is detrimental to the health of the trees and shrubs. The perimeter buffer woodlands will be protected by that area that I was referencing earlier. We call it buffering the buffer, the 20-foot protection area. The buffer and protection area will be fenced off and marked during construction, something Mr. Schaefer has asked for, where we put a fence in the property so folks that are out there doing site work know not to go within the fence and destroy the woodlands or the shrubs and natural setting behind the fence. Selective clearing removal of invasive species and dead trees in the woodlands is permitted. That's the same standard that we have with the resource buffer. If there are things that can be removed because they're invasive, they should be. Walking trails, of course, are permitted and encouraged in woodlands. Access point to those woodlands for the buffer maintenance is permitted. Any removal or damage of trees within the woodlands is subject to the mitigation requirements, which we'll highlight in a minute. And then woodlands grounds is forbidden to be cleared, graded, or grubbed, something that we see sometimes now where mistake or not mistake, heavy equipment go inside the buffer area and really impact that area and the trees within.
So removal and damage of trees, is that just prior to the completion of the development, or is that in perpetuity? Or
we see that as in perpetuity. If a tree becomes unhealthy, and really if it's a safety issue, you should be allowed to remove it and so come in and.
HOA is responsible, or at some point?
At some point, there's a handshake point where it moves from developer to HOA, and yes, that responsibility would move as well. So once it gets into the hands of the HOA's responsibility, yes, they would be allowed to, under these rules, remove the tree or clear out any dead tree, or even if it's for limited clearing for the view shed, if that's something that would be permitted in certain cases, yes, they could be allowed to do that. Again, under the purview of the Planning and Zoning Department, they'd come in and ask to have that done. So here's one of the bigger incentives, and one of the things that we talked about throughout this initiative is, what do we do to try to keep woods that are being used for the perimeter buffer in place and not destroyed for the sake of the development? This is what we've created, where if there is woodlands, we're having a 5-year look back. And that 5-year look back is hopefully the incentive for the developer not to go into that 30-foot area and keep the trees. Everyone would agree that existing healthy trees create a better perimeter buffer than trees that are planted and take 20 to 30 years to grow to any height. So I gave a demonstration in our last presentation. I'm not going to do it here, but what we're doing is we're creating this area called the cleared area that makes up the perimeter buffer. In essence, that's the 30 feet that if they have gone inside the perimeter buffer of 30 feet and cleared that up to the property line, we're gonna measure that area. And we're gonna make them plant that back 2 times the size of what they've taken down. So if trees are in existence, within 5 years are cleared, and you go inside the perimeter buffer and clear the trees, then you're gonna be required to replant trees at the amount of 2 times what you've cleared. So if you knock down an acre of trees, you're gonna be required to plant 2 acres of trees, okay?
Does that include the depth also, 2 times the depth?
No, you're gonna have to plant 30 feet if you've gone into the 30 feet. So 30 feet remains the standard, but if you've knocked down an acre of trees in that 30 feet, you're gonna have to plant 2 acres of trees somewhere else. Or just make the 30 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet to create a bigger buffer to get to your 2 acres.
So I'm going to be clear on this. They could potentially clear right up to the property line and then plant trees somewhere else?
No. If they choose, first of all, 5-year look back, you knock down the trees within 5 years inside the perimeter buffer. And you can still knock down the trees if there are trees on the property outside the perimeter buffer, of course, to put in your site work and your infrastructure. But if you clear the 30 feet buffer of trees, then you're going to have to plant those trees back, and you're going to have to plant double what you knock down. So find acreage somewhere else on that property to plant trees or keep trees. Or, in essence, we could say you can do that somewhere outside of that parcel. If you skip down to the bottom, you can choose to replant trees or protect trees off-site as well in the same HUC 12, or if it's on the property that you're developing, it has to be protected under a perpetual conservation easement. So you can do it on-site or off-site. Yeah. Double the size.
Now, I mean, I'll be honest, one of the bits of feedback I get from people is that the county has these rules and guidelines, but we don't have a lot of enforcement power. And I always just tell them to talk to Doug Hudson. But that is a complaint that they're like, you guys, you know, you tell them they can't do this, they do it anyway, and I don't see any penalties for them.
So. Exactly.
You're right. Something Mr. Hudson has said along the way through this initiative is we've got to put penalties in place to get people's attention. And
that's what I was getting ready for, yeah.
Stay tuned. We'll get to the end of the penalty section, and it does speak to that. We have – currently we have limited penalties and violations in today's code. And certainly it does not incentivize people you're allowed to knock down trees if you have to.
Right.
In this instance, if this gets passed – the incentive is not to knock down trees, and we don't have that in today's code.
Perfect example is that's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Right.
At times.
Correct.
So we want to get rid of that.
It's something I have to be clear about. This is in a situation that we've all been made familiar with where trees exist, and you've knocked down the trees within 5 years of asking to have the trees developed, only in the perimeter buffer. If you have 100 acres of full trees and you knock down everything up to the 30 feet perimeter buffer, that's a different conversation. That's not what we're proposing here. We're only talking about protecting the perimeter buffer. I know there's been conversation about a tree ordinance. This was our first priority. We're going to do this one, and then we may have that discussion in the future to worry about the other trees on the property. Okay, we jumped around a little bit. I'll start off by looking towards the top where we are asking to have things planted at 2 times the size of what was cleared, 50 trees per acre. That's a greater density. Again, you still have to have a 30-foot buffer no matter what you decide to plant. So the perimeter buffer will always remain 30 feet. We continue to have the standards that are listed in Section 2 of what has to be planted and meeting those standards. So nothing really changes in a perimeter buffer if the trees get knocked down, except we're hoping that this will incentivize them not to knock the trees down by having to plant twice as many, twice as much area, and twice as much trees. I did mention that another thought, we could allow them to replant property other than the one harvested off-site. But we're keeping that within the HUC 12. That's a defined area that we used at the resource buffer. It's really an area that is nearby the property. It's not too far away, and it's defined by the USGS. If you protect property within the development, it's going to be protected with a perpetual conservation easement. And then again, 2 times the area will be replanted. Everyone okay with that? Moving forward, you understand what we're saying? Okay. Then, of course, as explained in the workshop and then through these additional presentations, there's areas that don't have trees at all and that get developed. That's pretty straightforward. Without trees, you've got to plant a perimeter buffer. You've got to plant it to the standards that we've listed here. You've got to have a landscape plan. You've got to make sure the trees are planted correctly through the ANSI standards. You've got to make sure the trees and shrubs grow and stay growing, and it's the developer's responsibilities for 2 years to ensure that those trees and shrubs remain healthy. At some point, there will be a handover point, then it'll be the HOA's responsibility in perpetuity to ensure the perimeter buffers remain healthy.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Line 168 talked about the 2-year period that the developer is going to be responsible to remain healthy?
168, yes.
On page six.
Mm-hmm.
Is that language a little loose? What does two-year guarantee mean?
Yes, this is not what an ordinance would say.
Okay.
But we want to be clear that the perimeter buffer will have a two-year guarantee secured by bonding from this time of substantial completion. So,
and what happens? He goes back in, he replants the dead vegetation, shrubs, or trees, and they die again because he didn't water them at the 2 years. You know, you're at 23 months, he replants, you get a drought, they die again. What happens then?
I think the intent was, I'm asking our lawyer to bail us out again, but I think the intent is that, well,
at that point, we wouldn't release the bond. They'd have to come in and plant, replant the ones that died in the 23rd month, you know, because we're still holding that bond for 2 years after substantial completion.
But if they're dead in 36 months?
Well, in 36 months, then it's on the HOA or whomever at that point. So, I mean, because we're not in the business, whether it's sidewalks or streets or whatever, we're not in the business of guaranteeing that sort of thing in perpetuity. At some point, there has to be a cutoff for the county.
Is it typical for a control to pass the HOA within 2 years?
It depends. This, you know, and I don't want to say that it is or is not. What we looked at to try to extend it as much as possible to make sure that the trees would live is that you have to plant them before the first building permit. So that gets you a really early date to get trees in the ground. Then you're going to be building houses and everything else. Then county engineering or P&Z staff are going to go out and inspect to give you substantial completion once everything's done in that section. And then the 2 years start. So it's really probably going to end up being, you know, several years from building permit to substantial completion, then 2 years after that. Because the idea is we want to get these trees established.
Well, that brings up another. Go ahead. Okay. Say they've got to plant them prior to the first building permit, but that's by phase, correct? That's not the entire subdivision?
That's correct. That's by phase. And we're not going to let you start the next phase until the prior one's planted, et cetera. So, yeah. Yep. The issue is, too, we thought about making it the entire subdivision, but on larger subdivisions, you know, you can't even get back, say, in the back of it, if that's, you know, the later phase, you wouldn't even be able to physically get back there to plant the trees or inspect them or whatever else, because you got to put the streets and roads and everything in the first phases to work your way back. Because sort of logically, you think, well, why wouldn't we just say put the buffer in day one? But just as a practical matter, it just doesn't work that way.
Thanks, Vince. Mm-hmm. And recall the workshop and in other illustrations we've showed before, there was no plan to have these buffers installed at a certain time. And let's be clear, these buffers are mostly screening and filtering of what's on the other side of the buffer. It's not, it's very minimum water quality, very minimum habitat creation. This is just to filter out views and what's on the other side of this property, whether it be some other activity or other homes or someone that's now looking at houses coming to their backyard. So we wanted to make sure that the perimeter buffer's in place when the houses go in place. And we saw some pictures of development where there wasn't a perimeter buffer and the houses were already up and being lived in, and perimeter buffer's coming way after that. So by having what Mr. Robertson described as shrubs and trees and perimeter buffers planted along in sequence before the houses come, the thought is that there'll be something growing and creating that filtration by the time someone moves into a house. And we do that by phase. Certainly some of the larger developments take many years to see the last phase as compared to the first phase. And we're hoping that the perimeter buffers are up and growing by that time. Okay, let's talk about the landscape plan. Again, additional requirements that may exist today in our code, but certainly they're not as strong as we're proposing in this ordinance update. So we're going to require a plan for all subdivisions or all developments, and the plan will include all these requirements. the approximate location of the protective fencing, location, space, and height of the species of new trees and shrubs that will be planted, location of the perimeter buffer signage, measures to avoid sedimentation, intrusions, and erosion, summary table of all the new trees to be planted and existing trees to be retained, A note confirming the full cost of replacement for the trees and shrubs will be on the landscape plan. The planning schedule, that's what we were talking about before. So if you're going to phase out a development, you're also going to have to phase in the perimeter buffer. That planning schedule will be listed clearly on the landscape plan. The perimeter buffer by phase must be planted prior to the residential building permits for that respective phase. It's what we just referenced. And that's by phase. So all of phase one has to be planted and installed before phase two can be released. And then a miscellaneous clause allowing the Plan Zoning Commission to approve a plan with other features. That is actually in today's code where they're talking about perimeter buffer requirements, especially the buffers that are on DelDOT roads. Okay, timing, bonds, and guarantees. We've touched on a portion of this. This section, section four, will be where we list these bonds and guarantees. Again, the perimeter buffer by phase must be planted ahead of the permit for the first building. When woodlands exist, the perimeter buffer and protection area shall be protected and marked prior to the notice for proceed. That's going to be the protective fence. The developer is responsible for all the stakes, guide wires, and protective fencing that goes in the beginning. Performance bond or other guarantee to cover perimeter buffer in the amount of 125% or 50,000, whichever is greater, of the cost of the installation and value of the replacement plantings. All guarantees for the perimeter existed or planted will be for 2 years. And then we talk about perimeter buffer maintenance in section five, defines the responsibility for the health and survival of the buffer. We talked about this already. Developer will be responsible for the survival of the buffer for 2 years. Perpetual maintenance of the buffer will be recorded, and there will be a restrictive covenant. These are all things, Mr. Riley, back to your point earlier about the county having the ability to go in and enforce. These are things that we feel that will help us do that. Right now, we don't have those mechanisms in place, or if we do, they're not as strong as this ordinance purports to be. So we're going to try to boost our ability to ensure that enforcement is there.
But if you don't have compliance, what's your recourse?
Thank you for that segue into the next section.
I knew it.
We'll talk about fines in a minute, but tree mitigation. So mistakes happen on purpose or not, and perimeter buffers are affected by mistakes. And we need to make sure that if mistakes happen, what do we do to mitigate the trees that are affected? So we put a tree mitigation section in this proposal. The tree mitigation will be required when the buffer and protection area or existing woodlands is damaged without authorization. So if the guy mistakenly drives over the fence into the area and clears out some trees, what do we require? Well, this is what we're talking about here. We're not sure how that's going to happen now that we're requiring a fence to be put in place. But hopefully this fence will prevent that. But if it doesn't, then we're going to say that you've got to go out and hire a licensed professional to come up with a plan. The tree mitigation replacement will be at the rate of 3 trees for every 1 tree removed or damaged. All trees and shrubs will again meet the standards that are listed in our plans. An act of God or natural causes is exempt. Trees do die, trees do fall down. And if you need to go in and remove a tree, whether it be by some kind of mechanical means or otherwise, working with the Planning Zoning Department, you'll be allowed to do that. And then
remind me, is there any language in the existing code or proposed language in this new code about the type of species of vegetation? Are we going to do indigenous species or just anything?
That's a great question. And you will see in this proposal that we use the term local and native species. And the reason we haven't been able to come up with a standard list of native species is because it has become very difficult between two or three state agencies to have a list of native species native to Delaware. I would go so far as saying I think some lists exist, but I don't know that it's the official state list of native species. So instead of waiting for that, we've just used the term native and local species. Of course, non-native or invasive species would not be allowed.
What does local species mean?
I can assist with that one.
Does that mean it's a warden's garden store?
Go ahead, Mr. Whitehouse.
Local means local to the state of Delaware. So, and there are lists of species that are circulated. There is no one singular list, but native and local essentially mean to the state. So,
and then keep in mind that where Mr. Lawson was getting to was that landscape plan requirement. You know, we do have that the types of planting are going to have to be, you know, identified by a licensed landscape architect, certified arborist, certified nursery professional, licensed forester, or something along those lines. So, you know, the professionals would make that determination. We, again, it's one of those things when we started drafting this, we thought, well, that's easy. There's got to be a list of these trees. Well, you know, not so much. There is one in Newcastle County, but it was literally like pages and pages and pages long with all sorts of different variables, and it was just entirely too cumbersome for, you know, us to try to implement. And I think the Department of Agriculture didn't have one, which we thought they would anyhow. We made the effort, and it's just there's not something that's really usable out there. So that was a long answer to a short question. There's no list. We'll rely on the professionals. So.
There are certain agencies have certain lists, but it's not the official list. So which list do we point to say official? We got away from that by just saying local and native. You would be interested to know there is a committee form that Mr. Costello serves on to come up with a list of native species so that the state only plants native species on their properties. That list is being developed. So maybe we'll have a list in the future. As of right now, we're using the terminology local and native.
Will you amend the code and plug that list into the code?
Perhaps. Okay. Perhaps. It would be great if we were working off the same list for every agency, but to date, we don't have that one defined list, believe it or not. Another learning point in this whole exercise. Okay.
What a novel idea to have a...
This is Mr. Hudson's violation and penalty section. This section defines the penalties for violations of these new requirements. The penalties may be applied to a person, landowner, HOA, or developer. It's not always the developer that does bad deeds. There are HOAs that have affected their perimeter buffers and perhaps not put them back the way that they were initially approved. A fine of $10,000 per quarter acre per rata of disturbance to the perimeter buffer and or protection area may be imposed. That's the same amount of fine that we have in the resource buffer ordinance. A tree mitigation plan for the disturbance will be required. And then to Mr. Riley's point earlier, all building permits, zoning permits, and inspections will be held until tree mitigation is completed and approved by the Plan and Zoning Commission.
Well, that's the big one, but...
That's the real hammer that we have. Besides the fine, we don't necessarily want to fine someone, but if you're stopped in your tracks, if you cannot build, you don't get inspections anymore, and everything halts until this is fixed, that is a big incentive, we think, for developers in that context.
But it says may be imposed. It doesn't say will be.
Well, everyone's innocent until proven guilty. So we've got to be able to...
Well, assuming they're proven guilty, I mean...
Then without question, we can withhold permits and inspections immediately. We do that on a daily basis.
And whose judgment would it be that it may or may not be imposed?
It's written now. This is all through the Plan Zoning Department and the Constable's Office, and then eventually the Director of Plan Zoning and then Plan Zoning Commission. If things are happening immediately on the ground where we can't wait for a commission review, then we send the constable out, and under their judgment, they would issue a notice of violation and a stop order on activities out there. That happens now. This would codify that authority under this context of protecting the perimeter buffer.
And would all fines have to be paid as well before permits could be issued?
We can make sure that's written in so that it's clear. Again, the fining capability of the county needs to be very clear in our ordinances. So this is just a very generalized way of saying we're going to fine you if you create a problem and violate what we impose. We'll make sure that it's clear and the process is clear too, that if there is a violation, they know what to expect. As I mentioned before, this is already in the code as it relates to the resource buffer protection. So if you have a problem, if there's a violation with the resource buffer, these are the same steps that take place right now. So there's some similarity and some consistency.
Right.
Okay. So that concludes staff's recommendations for this update. In summary, the document that we handed out today that's on the website and in the packet, this is our roadmap for the ordinance drafting. Unless I hear any voice of concern today from you all, that's what we're going to do, is instruct the county attorneys to start drafting this ordinance and then come back to you with official introduction.
Your potential timeline?
Well, marijuana ordinance, accessory dwelling ordinance. we will ask him to proceed with haste.
Yeah, and we've done most of the heavy lifting with this outline. What we're going to have to do is go through, so we don't have to draft it from scratch, but there's a lot of existing language that deals with our current perimeter buffer requirements that we'll have to delete. And as one of the things that we talked about early on is that the current language is oddly buried in our definitions. There's requirements within the definitions, which is a really odd place for them. We're going to reorganize a little better, pull it out of there, put it somewhere else in the code so it makes sense as a requirement, not just a definition. But I'll get going on it with, I'll do haste with everything else we have going on. So, thank you.
Thank you,
no
sir.
No objection? Okay.
I'm hearing you, so you're good.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Now your report. When you get back to your seat.
County Administrator's report for February 20th. Item one, per the attached Engineering Department fact sheet, Headwater Cove's Phase 4 construction record and Plover Point Oak Landing Phase 2 construction record received substantial completion effective February 15th. Item two, it's with great sadness that we inform you that pensioner John Kinsley Jr. passed away on Wednesday, February 14th. Mr. Kinsley began his career with Sussex County in 1990, where he worked until February 2008 for a total of 17 years of service. His last position with the county was Tech Service Division Manager in the Emergency Medical Services Department. We'd like to extend our condolences to the Kinsley family. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. I will reference it. I did go to Mr. Kinsley's service yesterday, and John was one of what we call the Golden 10, the first 10 paramedics hired by the county. He was one of them. Good man. So, Mr. Bill Poff. Bill, turn your mic on, please. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Today I bring you two leases for the Delaware Coastal Business Park. The first lease is with Delaware Technical and Community College for their Class A CDL training program. We've worked on this quite a while, and I really want to personally thank Mark Parker, the assistant county engineer, for all his work in getting that completely resurveyed and in the right direction. So I do have a motion for that lease.
Please read your motion, sir.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the lease agreement with Delaware Technical and Community College located at 21765 Nanticoke Avenue, which is identified as part of Lot 8, part of Lease Area 2, and part of the former runway 1634 in the Delaware Coastal Business Park, to be a training program for their CDL certificate program. You can understand with that motion how difficult it was for us to get that all in place.
Sure. Pleasure, council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer. Questions on a motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I have a yes. Motion carried. Next, sir.
The next lease is with JDJS LLC, trading as Jenny Gems. They're going to lease 2134 Cedar Creek Avenue, and they will operate their wood shop for their gift and sign manufacturing business. I do have a motion for that lease.
Please read your motion.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the lease agreement with JDJS LLC, trading as Jenny Gems, located at 21345 Cedar Creek Avenue, which is identified as part of Lot 14 in the Delaware Coastal Business Park, for the operation of a wood shop for their gift and sign manufacturing business.
Pleasure, council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley. Second, okay. Mr. Schaefer. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I have a yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. Mr. Medlars, come on down to visit with us. It's good to see you back.
Thank you for allowing me a little extra time.
So take all the time you need.
So let me start with, this is my first appearance as the retired county engineer. We do have your new appointed county engineer in the audience, who is going to follow along with some of the project memos. I'm presenting the ones and will be in the future until my full retirement, the ones I have started and am fully responsible for.
Sure.
He, Mr. Harmer, will be presenting any and all other ones. So that's sort of like how we're going to transition this out. So you can see that you have put in place a good transition.
Sure.
So starting with the first one is a legacy issue on the air park / business park side. You may recall that the county engineering department started this several years ago to bring natural gas first to the business park, which then became a joint venture with Eastern Shore Natural Gas, the pressure reducing station, and then further down the road, once we had the pressure reducing station, we had another council touch when you extended the easement area down to the fire marshal's office, plus we granted another easement throughout the business park for Chesapeake as a supplier on the customer side. So about a year ago, we started negotiations with Chesapeake to extend it across the runway and serve all of Rudder Lane, because we had needs, especially our joint maintenance building and the EOC, pretty big gas users. You may vaguely remember we had a change order under the EOC for the gas line to be extended from the maintenance building to the operations center for no other reason but to tie the two together in anticipation of natural gas arriving.
Right.
So if you recall, the business park required a advance agreement with grants contribution agreement with the Chesapeake. So you're paying a certain amount of money towards the installation, which is then rebated over the course of the time based on customer connections. The list you see, these are committed customers who are actually ready, willing, and able. Most of them are us, but also several of the Shell hangars under our leases, as well as Deltec under our leases. So we're quite confident that everybody who's on that list will connect, and you will see the rebates coming back to us as soon as the gas usage starts.
Right.
So it's a great extension, great next step. So we are asking you to authorize the agreement.
You have a motion?
Yes. Be moved based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department, council approved the customer advance agreement with Chesapeake Utilities Corporation to furnish natural gas services to Delaware Coast Airport along Rudder Lane as presented.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
I'll second.
Mr. Hudson. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes. Motion carried. Next, sir.
So you certainly know the Inland Base project and all its aspects over all these budget years. And this is the conduit loop. So we have finally gotten the permit from the conservation district for the from the stormwater side and the sediment erosion control side. And we have reached conclusion, Mr. Lawson and I were involved in that, with DLDOT to have a DLDOT permit issued for the road crossings and for the what we call right-of-way occupancy parallel with the roadway. It was a little bit tricky because in leading up to it, we, the engineering department, closely coordinated with the Delaware Electric Co-op to have their power line relocated on Montjoy Road. Their power line was actually drilled in onto our property under the trees. So we saved literally many acres of clear cutting along, which we would have had to do based on state maintenance agreements or state the maintenance manual by DLDOT. So unfortunately, once we presented this all to DLDOT in the permit, that DLDOT says, oh, you didn't have us sign off on this. Thank you very much for getting this all done. The pole line is down, the power line's gone, you know, the path is clear. So in order to get this over the finish line, Mr. Lawson and the engineering department agreed the line is far enough off the road. We do not believe it will be affected ever by a Montjoy Road widening, even if full shoulders are added, the 10 feet. We're still beyond that. So Lawson, reluctantly would be the right adjective to say. Reluctantly, we are recommending that we sign the agreement to take on the responsibility to relocate the line if we end up in a future DLDOT project someday. Because otherwise, we'd be cutting a lot more trees down to get beyond the power line.
Right, yeah.
Which is...
So this makes more sense.
It is what it is. So I think it makes more sense to say we moved it back as far as possible from the paved area. We will, with high likelihood, never be impacted. But if we are, we will have to move the line.
You have a motion? I'll bet you do.
Reluctantly.
We'll pass it reluctantly then.
It be moved based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department that the County Council approved all utility agreement associated with the Inland Base Loop Project as presented.
Pleasure, Council.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Schaefer, second.
I'll second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
The next one is with the
yes, motion carried reluctantly.
My apologies.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
The next one is actually a success story, so we're happy to present that. The Long Neck Communities Project is going really well. We have done a lot of work. We're on schedule. We're on budget. And last summer, we hit a major snag because the Sherwood Forest service area has no natural drainage outlet. They have two stormwater ponds, they're infiltration ponds. The two adjoining ponds of the elementary school are infiltration ponds. So when we and the one on School Lane, the DLDOT road drainage, is going nowhere. So when we started to discharge for the dewatering last summer, it flooded the road, it filled the ponds up, it created a havoc. So with, again, Mr. Lawson's corporation and my contacts, his contacts, we were able to get the school district, thank you again, the school district to allow us to discharge into their ponds as well, and tunnel properties to discharge on their property. So we then crafted a time and material change order for the contractor to, because first we rejected their lump sum proposal, so which was well north of $200,000. So we had a time and material change order to get this all done, and now we're finally, all the accounting is finished, and we got it done for less than $100,000, which, and nobody got flooded out despite all these big storms, everything.
I'll tell you this, I drove down Cannon Road just after that recent big storm, and comparing that to like a couple years ago, I mean, there was no water on the road, everything was flowing, I mean, it was drastically improved.
This is very similar to the, you know, the Long Neck Commuters project. It's very similar to our Inland Bays project. You know, the improvements we have now put in place on the Cannon Road and Friendship Road, Inland Bays Road area, are going to significantly reduce the rainfall runoff. Now, what we did artificially here at the Sherwood Forest, we essentially created, by this dewatering, we created a storm on top of a storm. So when that, initially we flooded out that whole area, so we had to do something, and by going to the adjoining property owners and putting temporary agreements in place, allowed us to avoid that scenario. So we are, I think that's, it's truly a success story that we got this done and all the deep sewer installations are complete.
Very good.
So we moved on to Autumn and Branch Roads over there on the other side of Route 24. So I have a motion for your consideration.
Please read your motion.
Be it removed based upon the recommendation of Sussex County Engineering Department, change order number one for contract S21-10, Long Neck Communities, be approved by increasing the contract by $93,066.11.
Pleasure, Council.
Preferred option.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer, questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Next, sir.
The next one is slightly, let's say, surprising to me, because every progress meeting we have for the South Coast project, there's a discussion we have about RFPs, anything, you know, related to it, what we've learned, et cetera. So we always give you proactive, hey, this is what we're seeing, if anything, and you know, it's been whittling down quite a bit over the years, literally 3.5 years. And when the environmental services team came to me just a couple of weeks ago, right before my incident, said, you know, we really want you to look at this. It's a pneumatic control system which controls the valves associated with our existing filter gallery, which opens and closes the valves with air pressure. And the number of the solenoid valves and a number of these piston control valves have some functioning problems. And they said, hey, can't we get this upgraded? So both of our filter galleries have new pneumatic controls versus having 17-year-old ones versus brand new ones. And when it first came to me, I said to Mr. Bob Moore, I said, Bob, why am I hearing this now versus at the last two progress meetings or whenever we should have discussed it? So normally, when we do have something which has a relatively long lead time, and I know it's on the list, you've seen it, you've heard it, I give them administrative approval to order it. In this case, I didn't, because I was a little bit irritated. So you have the luxury of a complete discretionary decision and say, so the other option would be to identify each single individual piece, get new ones installed, and also get one cabinet that's pretty rusted out, get that one replaced also. It's probably not the better solution, so I'm bringing it forward, please. But please duly noted that the county engineer did not say go ahead and order it.
You have a motion?
Yes. Be it removed based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department that change order number 33 for contract C19-11 South Coastal Regional Wastewater Facility Treatment Process Upgrade number 3, general construction, be approved, increasing the contract by $62,212.29. And by the way, I do have Ms. Jennings' support. I did ask her about it.
Pleasure, Council.
So
motion, Mr. Schaefer, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President. Motion carried. Now you can go ahead and order it. Mr. Ashman. I'll get a little room here for... Yeah, yeah. Don't get in the way. I bet so.
Good afternoon. This is for the proposed Bosch Berries expansion of the Sussex County Unified Sanitary Sewer District, and this is for permission to prepare and post notices for a public hearing. This would be for our western Sussex area, and the engineering department has received a request from Davis, Bowen, and Friedel on behalf of their client, bear with me, Tijman Walter von de Bosch, the owners and developers of a project known as Bosch Berries for parcel 131-6-1.00. Parcel is zoned AR1, agricultural residential, and adjacent to the existing town boundary. Sussex County Unified Sanitary Sewer District also abuts it. They will be required to annex into the town of Greenwood per our agreement, and the project would be responsible for system connection charges of $7,700 per EDU based on current rates.
Wouldn't that be the town of Bridgeville?
Town of Bridgeville.
Thank you.
They would. There is a tentative public hearing scheduled for April 9th at county council meeting, should you approve our permission to prepare and post notices.
You have a motion?
I do. Be it moved by Sussex County Council that the Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the Bosch Berries expansion of the Sussex County Unified Sanitary Sewer District to include parcel 131-6.00-1.00 as presented on February 20th, 2024.
Pleasure, Council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mrs. Green. Second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you. Next.
This is for establishing a resolution on the boundary of the South Greenwood area. We had a public hearing in council. on December 5th, council granted permission to prepare and post notices for the creation of South Greenwood, also the Delaware Electric Co-op is or the properties. For parcels 530-14-16 and 17. Engineering department added to the county website, posted notices on January 8th and advertised the weeks of the 8th and the 15th. On January 23rd, the public hearing was held on the boundaries in council chambers, and we allowed residents and neighboring parcels until February 2nd to request being included in the boundary. The department received no such requests and like to establish the area as previously presented to include just those two parcels. And I have a resolution.
Please read your resolution.
Resolution establishing the proposed boundary of the Sussex County Unified Sanitary Sewer District, South Greenwood area. Requests were received from property owners requesting Sussex County Council to submit the question of organizing a sanitary sewer district to a vote of electors residing or owning property in that area.
Pleasure, Council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mrs. Green. Second.
A second.
Mr. Hudson. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
So this is being a small area, we are going to complete it strictly by mail-in ballot, so we do not need to have an off-site.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you. Old business, Mr. Whitehouse.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of Council. We have 5 items of old business this afternoon. The first is conditional use number 2397, filed on behalf of Miss Pillion Solar Farm, LLC. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural district for a solar array to be located on the northwest side of Shawnee Road, which is Route 36, approximately 0.2 miles southwest of Old Shawnee Road, which is Sussex County Route 42. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held at its meeting of December 12th of last year. And at the conclusion of the public hearing, County Council deferred for further consideration. Thank you.
Any questions of Council? And Mr. Moore, read short title, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a solar array to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 121.33 acres, more or less, for the reasons given by planning zoning numbered 1 through 10 with conditions 11A through I.
Pleasure, Council.
I make a motion to approve.
Motion, Mrs. Green, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes. Based on the recommendation, planning and zoning, I vote yes.
Mr. Schaefer.
I will vote yes based on the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Mr. Hudson.
I agree with Planning and Zoning's recommendations. I vote yes.
Mr. Riley.
I vote yes based on Planning and Zoning's recommendation.
I also will vote yes based on P&Z's recommendation. Motion carried. Next.
Our next is conditional use number 2398, filed on behalf of Chaberton Energy, Bluehead Solar. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district to allow for a solar farm to be located on the southeast side of Hudson Road, which is Sussex County Route 387, approximately 0.61 miles south of the intersection of Lighthouse Road and Hudson Road. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held at its meeting of December 12th of last year. And at the conclusion of the public hearing, County Council deferred action on the application for further consideration.
Any questions of council? We'll read short title, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district to allow for a solar farm to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 61.15 acres, more or less, for the reasons given by planning and zoning numbered 1 through 10, with conditions 11A through I.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer, any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
I vote yes based on the reasons given by Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Schaefer.
I will vote yes based on the recommendation of Planning and Zoning Commission.
Mrs. Green.
Vote yes based on the recommendation of Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Riley.
I'll also vote yes based on Planning and Zoning's recommendations.
I'll vote yes based on P&Z recommendation. Motion carried. Next.
Our next item is conditional use number 2433, filed on behalf of Chaberton Solar. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a solar array to be located on the south side of Lighthouse Road, which is Route 54, approximately 1.05 miles of east of Hudson Road. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held on December 12th of last year. And at the conclusion of the public hearing, action was deferred on the application for further consideration.
Any questions, Council? More read short title, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a solar array to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 50.50 acres, more or less, for the reasons given by planning zoning numbers 1 through 9, with conditions 10A through I.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer, questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
I vote yes based on conditions given or reasons given by Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Schaefer.
I vote yes based on the recommendation of Planning and Zoning Commission.
Mrs. Green.
I'll vote yes based on the recommendation of Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Riley.
I vote yes based on Planning and Zoning's recommendation.
I'll also vote yes based on P&Z recommendation. Motion carried. Next.
Our next is conditional use number 2404, filed on behalf of Elk Development LLC. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a GR general residential district for a solar farm to be located on a certain parcel of land containing 20.57 acres lying on the northwest side of Thoroughgoods Road, which is Sussex County Route 333, approximately 0.5 miles southwest of Iron Branch Road, which is Sussex County Route 331. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held at its meeting of January 9th of this year. And at the conclusion of the public hearing, action on the application was deferred for further consideration.
Any questions of council? More read short title, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance grant a conditional use of land in a GR general residential district for a solar farm to be located on a certain parcel of land lying being in Dagsboro 100, Sussex County, containing 20.57 acres, more or less, for the reasons given by planning and zoning number 1 through 10, with conditions 11A through I.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Riley.
I vote yes based on the recommendation of planning and zoning.
Mr. Schaefer.
I will vote yes based on the recommendation of planning and zoning.
Mr. Green.
I'll vote yes based on the recommendation from planning and zoning.
Mr. Hudson.
I agree with planning and zoning. I vote yes.
I also agree with planning and zoning. I vote yes. Motion carried. Next.
Our last item of all business is conditional use number 2405, also filed on behalf of Elk Development LLC. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a GR, general residential district, for a solar farm to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Dagsborough 100, Sussex County, containing 22.97 acres, more or less. The property is lying on the southeast side of Thurgoes Road, which is Sussex County Route 33, approximately 0.5 miles southwest of Iron Branch Road. County Council may remember this from the public hearing that was held at its meeting of January 9th of this year, and at the conclusion of the public hearing, action on the application was deferred for further consideration.
Any questions of the council? Moore, read short title, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance granting conditional use of land in a GR, general residential district, for a solar farm to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Dagsborough 100, Sussex County, containing 22.97 acres, more or less, for the reasons given by planning zoning numbered 1 through 10 with conditions 11A through I.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second.
Second.
Mr. Schaefer, questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
I vote yes. I agree with planning and zoning's recommendation.
Schaefer.
I vote yes based on a recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Mrs. Green.
I'll vote yes based on the recommendation from Planning and Zoning.
Mr. Riley.
I'll also vote yes based on Planning and Zoning's recommendation.
I'll also vote yes based on PZ's recommendation. Motion carried. Introduction, proposed zoning ordinances.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This item was on the agenda, but the county is in receipt of a letter from the Office of State Planning Coordination regarding the four ordinances to the land use application filed on behalf of CMF Cool Spring LLC. And based on that letter, all four ordinances would not be introduced at this time while we review the state's letter.
Thank you, sir. Council member comments. Council member comments. Okay, it is 1:08. Entertaining motion to go into recess to 1:30 public hearings.
So
motion, Mr. Schaefer, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Schaefer.
Yes.
Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will get now in recess to 1:30.